in-depth and God-filled conversations with some of the brightest names in contemporary Christian music and worship. This is The Artist Interview with Gordon T.
Hey, I'm Josh Wilson, and you're listening to The Artist Interview on Hope FM. Because I walk through the valley of shadows, and it scared me half to death. But you're with me everywhere I go, so I won't give up yet. My fears would surely kill me if I didn't know the truth. The things that I'm afraid of aren't afraid of you. You prepare a table for me, right in front of my worst enemies. You're as calm and relaxed as can be.
And that was Things That I'm Afraid Of by the wonderful Josh Wilson. And we're so pleased that Josh is with us today for The Artist Interview. Hey, Josh, how are you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing so well. So glad to be back with you. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's been almost 3 years since we last chatted. And since then, our audience has grown rather largely. So lots of people may not have had the opportunity to ever hear the first time that you were on the show. So it would be great if we could just rewind time and you give us a bit of a story as to how you first got into music and how you actually came to, well, call yourself a Christian.
Yeah, so I grew up in Texas, in Northwest Texas, in a town called Lubbock. And my dad is a pastor, and he and my mom still live there. And my dad is still a pastor at that same church where I grew up. And so I grew up hearing about Jesus and came to know Jesus at a young age. I was probably about 10 years old. But just like so many of us, of course, that's been a journey. I love something I heard one time. It says, I gave as much as I knew about myself to as much as I knew about Jesus at the time. And I've continued to do that as I follow Christ throughout my life. And I actually got started in music at that church as well. I played on our youth band worship team, and I played, for the entire congregation quite often. And I took guitar lessons and taught guitar lessons in high school. And when I got into college, I got really into songwriting. I loved playing instruments and singing, but it was in college that I realized that God had given me some things to say in music and in songs. And for a while, I thought I was just going to be a guitar player or write songs for somebody else. But I realized after a while that if people were going to hear the songs I was writing, I was going to have to go out and sing them. And so that's how I got started in college, playing in coffee shops and other youth groups and churches and college groups. And signed my first record deal the day I graduated college. And I have been doing music full time since. So I spend my time writing, recording, and touring, and kind of spend my time equally split between those three things. And so grateful to be able to do that.
So how many years ago was you signed that record deal?
Well, I hesitated to say it because I did just turn 40. 2006 was when I graduated Belmont University with a music business degree, and the Capitol Records, Sparrow Records, offered me a record deal on that day.
That's amazing. And there's lots of people who graduate and then never get a record deal. How on earth did it come about that on the day you graduated, you got it?
Just the timing of it. It was first and foremost the Lord, but I was so grateful because I had started playing concerts and recording my own independent albums in college. So I already had started in music. And when Sparrow Records came alongside and said, we're interested in talking about a record deal, it took probably, I don't know, the better part of a year to get through talks and make sure everybody was set to go. And so the fact that the call came in on that day was really special because my parents were in town to see me graduate from college. And we were all in their hotel room. And I remember my A&R guy, his name is Brad, he called and I put it on speaker. And he said on the phone, we'd like to officially offer you a record deal. My mom was crying. And so it really was neat timing and just affirmation that this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's extraordinary. And what was your actual degree in? And what was it called?
Yeah, so I started as a music major. And then after a semester, I switched over to music business, which is essentially a bachelor's of business degree with a focus on the music industry.
Has it been useful having all that business knowledge then as well?
For sure. You know, so much has changed in the last, goodness, that's 18 years ago. A lot's changed, but a lot of the basics are the same. And so learning some of the fundamentals about how a lot of this works has been so helpful because I definitely see my music as a gift and as a ministry, and it's something I want to help people with, but also it's how I pay my bills. And so just to learn the ins and outs of how to make a living through music in college was extremely helpful.
And I guess it was a bit of a different model back then, because streaming wouldn't have been such a big thing.
You know what? The first iPhone came out 2007. So the iPod was already out and the iTunes store was a thing, but streaming wasn't even a thing. You had to purchase those digital files and load them onto your iPod or your computer. So yeah, I kind of honestly came into the industry at probably the worst time to make a living doing this, because CDs were going out and streaming hadn't taken off yet. And things are much better now. You know, streaming is really picking up. In fact, I heard last year for the first time since the bust after CDs went out and there was illegal downloading. Last year, I believe the music industry finally has caught up and surpassed where it was in its heyday. So things are looking good for musicians, but it's been kind of a weird time to enter the music industry, but I've, you know, been able to pay the bills and so grateful.
Yeah. Right. And you're smiling and still doing it. So yeah, that is pretty impressive. You're married, aren't you?
I am. I'm married to my wife. Her name is Becca, and we're going to celebrate 15 years this August.
That is wonderful. Let's rewind 15 years, or maybe a bit before that. How did you first meet then? And tell us the story behind that.
So she grew up in Oklahoma, and Oklahoma and I lived at Nashville at the time in Tennessee. And so we were about a 9-hour drive apart. So we were long distance for our entire dating relationship. And it's honestly, the flights between the two cities are kind of complicated. It's easier just to drive. We met at a concert I was doing for a Christian radio station in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where she lived. And it was an event on an outdoor riverwalk amphitheater. And she came, but she didn't see me play. She came late with some of my mutual friends. We had a mutual friend, and she just showed up after, and we met. And I mean, we hit it off. We have a lot in common. We're both pastor's kids. We're both middle children. And we were both born in the same tiny town in Arkansas. So immediately we had all these fun things to talk about. And in fact, my friend, our mutual friend, he was there with his wife. He thought that I was trying to impress her when she said, "I'm a pastor's kid." And I said, "Oh, me too." And she said, "I'm a middle child." "Oh, me too. I was born in El Dorado, Arkansas." I was like, "Me too." And my friend was like, "Oh, come on. You're making all this stuff." So,
but it was all genuinely true. I've got no idea where that place in Arkansas is, but
in the States, you wouldn't know where that is. It's a tiny town. I mean, it's so small, but it's really neat. We were born in the same hospital, 4 years apart. We never met until our adult lives, and God just brought us together quickly. I proposed marriage at 6 months, and then we got married 1 year and a day after we met.
Okay, well, that's reasonably quick, I would have said, especially if it's a long distance relationship. So, and did you already know things like what the next stage would be? Once you got married, you knew that she would move to Nashville, or?
It was pretty easy for us to decide what to do, because I had already established my career here. She was still in college, and so she transferred to a school here in Tennessee, finished here, and so it was never really a question. Of course, I was open to anything, but yeah, it made the most sense for us to come here. And we're still in Nashville. We've been married for 15 years. We've been in this house for 14. So we're, as far as we're concerned, this is home. We're going to stay put.
That sounds pretty good. You look pretty content with it. So what's been the best thing about being married, and what's been the hardest thing?
Oh, goodness. Well, it really has only gotten sweeter with time. Not that there haven't been hard times and a learning curve, but it's so amazing to have someone who I know is on my side no matter whatever I go through. She's a safe place for me to share those things with. I truly believe none of us are meant to do this life alone. That doesn't mean we're all meant to be married, but just having friends, having someone that we can talk to and pour into and just be honest with, that's probably the best part of marriage. And I say one other thing that's really great is, I'm thinking of that Justin Timberlake song Mirror, for me to see myself in her, like for her to reflect who I am. Is it's hard sometimes to think, this is something I need to work on. I'm so thankful I have somebody in my life who can call me out on these things that need work. So I hope that I've grown as a person, and just by being married to someone who I think is is amazing. And I mean, I want to be just like her when I grow up. So, you know, for her to give me advice on certain things, I hear it in a different way. So that's been wonderful. Some of the hardest things, I think we all go through difficult times. Our first year of marriage was kind of tough just because there was a learning curve since we were long distance to go from different states, 9 hours apart, to the same house. It was hard to kind of get into a rhythm of, oh, I had a lot of friends here. I'd lived here for a long time. She was new here. So finding her some friends and then finding couple friends who we can all get along with and hang out with. That was hard for the first year to learn who we were in day-to-day life and also to integrate her into my life here in Nashville. But I'd say after the first year, things got a lot easier and smoother. Of course, then, you know, you have kids. We have an 8-year-old. And once you have kids, then everyone's tired and busy. And so it's hard to get together with those friends. We're still kind of in that season. But it's been one of the most wonderful things, being married to Becca.
Oh, that's a lovely thing to hear. I'm glad you said that. That's good. So, and with regards to both of you being pastors' kids, were you both the same sort of church background? Was that sort of an easy fit, or was there lots of adjusting that you needed to do?
You know, right in line with us having so much in common, that is, yes, we were both of the same denomination. Especially, you know, our dads lived in that same small town as pastors. Now, they were both in different outlying towns. So they were actually about 40 minutes apart. And the small town that was actually the only town with a hospital, that was where we were both born. And then that our dads were pastors in those outlying communities. So they had a lot in common. They were of the same denomination. So we even grew up singing the same worship songs and doing the same sorts of youth group activities. And it's kind of a weird existence being a pastor's kid. So we immediately understood each other on that front. And so that's been another really great thing about being married to each other, is to have someone understand where you're coming from is a big deal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. A shared history. And was there a time, sometimes when I talk to pastors' kids, or PKs as they get called, did you have a time when you just went, actually, the church is not for me, or was it sort of fairly easy during your teens?
For me, until I graduated, I never really had doubts or questions about why I was a believer. And most of my big questions, sort of that crisis of faith for me, came in college when I got out of my, what I would call, a bubble of high school, of all church friends, spending so much time in the church with like-minded people. When I went to my university, I met other folks who believed differently than me, but who were kind and compassionate. And I thought, you know, is this whole Christianity thing, is Jesus, is the Bible, is all of this true? Is it real? And I had to kind of evaluate why I believed what I believed. And I had some difficult days in college, and thankfully God has been gracious and patient with me to continue to hold on to me as I question and as I seek. And I still have plenty of questions. I think any of us who are honest would say that we have questions that maybe won't get answered this side of heaven. But I'm learning that doesn't mean I'm a bad Christian. It means I actually take my faith seriously, because I want to know, you know, why this is this way and how I can be a better follower of Jesus, even though this part of the faith is confusing or this part of the Bible isn't clear, like to keep leaning in, to keep studying, to keep learning and praying and having faith.
Yeah. That, I guess that's one of the things that we can say, is that actually the Christian faith stands up to scrutiny, stands up to the tough times, stands up to questioning and exploring it and going deeper. And actually by that, we also get to know God more closely. So I'm not saying that it's good to have struggles, but out of them, good can still come. So one of the things that I've seen on your social media is definitely you talking very openly about some of the struggles that you've gone through. And that comes out through your music as well. You're very open about it. I guess being an artist, there's a lot of pressure. You are there to perform. And when I say perform, it's not just performing on a stage, but people have expectations all the time. Similar to the way with a pastor's kid, they do. So perhaps that's something you've had all your life to some degree. But I'm guessing that, I don't know this, because I often talk offline with artists who tell me, oh, they're going through tough seasons. It's actually, you know, they've been on the road a really long time, and it's hurting them. Whilst they are genuinely wanting to worship God and all they're doing, there's a price and there's a cost, and actually they start to run dry and all the rest of it. Can you tell me about your experience of being a Christian artist and living life with all the other complications that life throws on top of that, and some of the journey you've been through, some of the lows, and also finding God and help in those times?
Sure. You know, as a younger Christian, I had this misconception that if you follow Jesus, you're supposed to have it all together. It's supposed to be, you know, to have most of the answers to most of the questions and not really struggle. But the longer that I've followed Christ, the more I realize that I don't call myself a Christian because I have it all together. I call myself a Christian because I don't, and because I need someone else to hold me together. And that's Jesus. Colossians says that in Christ, all things hold together. And I have learned that that's true. And as I go on in my faith, I learn more and more just how much I need Christ to hold me together. And yeah, we all have different struggles. For me, I have struggled with, I didn't know this as a younger person, but would say, I knew I had anxiety, but I didn't quite know just how ingrained in me it was. There was a number of reasons as a kid that I kind of had some social anxiety. And then into adulthood, I didn't realize that it was sort of building and sort of brewing inside me. And in 2012, so about 12 years ago, I was just out and about running errands, and things in my life circumstantially were great. I was making an album. I remember I was driving to a office supply store to buy a hard drive, just kind of a mundane errand. And I got there and I started feeling lightheaded, and kind of the room started spinning, and I started having some chest pain right around where my heart is. And my hands started going numb and my feet started going numb, and I didn't know what was happening. So I remember I bought a bottle of water and chugged the whole thing. And then I got back in the car and I called my wife and I said, I don't know what's happening, but I'm having chest pains and I think I need to go to the ER. I thought it was something with my heart. And we went to the ER and they tested me and they said, your heart's okay. We think that was a panic attack. And I thought, that's odd. I had never had that. I didn't even know what that was.
How old were you at that stage?
I would have been about 28.
Okay.
About 28. Yeah. So, you know, young, too young to statistically to be having heart issues. So they said that was a panic attack. And I said, okay, well, how do I fix that? I don't want that to happen again. And it turned out to be more complicated and more complex than just a quick fix. So I sort of entered a season of rest and counseling and prayer, medication for the first time, anxiety medication. And thankfully, after about 6 months, it leveled out to the point where I stopped having panic attacks and I could leave my house again. For a while, I thought I was going to have to quit music. It was just my body was doing all these crazy, crazy things. And I think it was all that anxiety. And I don't think I was dealing with it in a healthy way. I think I was kind of stuffing it down rather than feeling my feelings. And that first panic attack, I think it was all of that anxiety coming out sideways, just my body saying, look, there is something, some things you need to deal with. And it's like a check engine light saying, you got to figure this out. Well, it's been a long journey. That was in 2012. So it's been 12 years and I got that under control, but, you know, life is full of ups and downs, and it's not, I don't think any of us can ever say that we've arrived. And fast forward a few years and, up until about 6 years ago, I had a problem with alcohol. I was using alcohol to self-medicate my anxiety. And at first I would say I drank in moderation. I would have a drink with friends. That'd be it. But after a while, I started to realize, oh, this kind of makes me feel relaxed. It sort of turned down the volume on that anxiety. And so I started drinking more and eventually drinking enough to become addicted, and to the point where I couldn't quit. I was having to drink every night to go to sleep. I wasn't drinking during the days, but I was drinking almost every night, and eventually kind of just had to tell my wife, look, I've tried to stop drinking. I was hiding it pretty well, the amount and the degree of the problem. But I said, look, I'm having a problem. I can't stop. I need to get some help. And that began a journey of getting sober from alcohol. And Jesus was with me every step of the way. I love what he says when he says, in this world you will have troubles, because I felt those troubles. But right after that, he says, but take heart, for I have overcome this world. And so when I place my hope in Jesus, he's overcome this world, and he's able to offer me peace and hope. And it doesn't mean it's easy, but it has been a hard journey, and anxiety and depression have continually sort of come in seasons and waves. So grateful to say I'm in a great spot now. I'm 7 years sober from alcohol. I feel like my mental health is in a good spot. So anyway, yeah, it's been a journey. And you're right, being an artist and being sort of a, I guess, a public figure, someone who stands in front of people to play music and talk about the hope I have, feels sometimes, especially in those harder moments, a bit duplicitous to think I'm dealing with this addiction, or I'm dealing with anxiety or depression. I'm hiding all these things. So my MO now is just to tell the truth, just to be honest. And that means if I'm feeling anxious, or if I'm struggling, man, I'm going to write a song about it. I'm going to talk about it on my socials or from the stage, because what I've learned is not a single person, not one, and maybe this will happen, but nobody has come up to me and said, I can't believe you're dealing with that. Or I can't believe you just confessed that. Anyone who has feedback for me, it's usually, thank you so much for being vulnerable. I deal with that too. How can I get help from my addiction? Or what did you do to help your anxiety? So it's kind of this positive feedback loop. It was really scary when I first decided to talk about my addiction and sobriety. But since then, man, it's just fun. I just got to show up and tell the truth. It's amazing. Not that I was lying, but I was only showing the world a portion of myself. And it was kind of the portion that didn't look like it needed Jesus. And so now I'm like, look, I got nothing to prove. I got nothing to hide. I'm broken. I'm healed. Jesus is healing me. But man, it's a journey, and I'm having a lot of fun with it now.
Wow, you know what? I am really looking forward to playing some more of your music, because it does just come out from your music that you are on a journey. It's not all sorted, but God's right there with you. So before we chat more about some of the things you've been through, it'd be great to play your brand new single, It Gets Better. Can you tell us about the heart of it? What prompted you into that, and what are you hoping people will get from it?
Yeah, It Gets Better is a really special song to me. In 2022, I was in Montana, a really sort of snowy, barren area of Montana, just kind of country land. And I was traveling, it was 6,000 miles in 3 weeks that I was playing a bunch of shows. I was driving by myself, so I don't recommend doing that. But for one reason or another, I found myself by myself out there. And I had an experience with that anxiety and depression coming out sideways again. I remember I played a show, and I got done with the show, walked into my hotel room, and I just collapsed on the floor crying. Just sort of come to the end of myself. And I called my wife Becca, and I said, I can't finish this tour. There's no way I can make it home. And my wife is so patient and kind and empathetic. And I don't know if you've ever gotten the right Bible verse, maybe at the wrong time from somebody, but she didn't do that. She was very sensitive to the moment. And instead of saying something that's true, but maybe not helpful in that moment, she said, I'm coming to you. She flew to where I was, and she came with me to my next two shows, so I wasn't alone. And then when she had to go back home, I had another friend in Utah hop in the car with me and come to the next two shows. And then when he had to go home, I had another friend hop in the car and get me all the way home. Finally, I got back home to Tennessee. I took some time off. I went to see my counselor. I rested. I got back on medication that I desperately needed in that time. And over 8 to 12 weeks, things sort of settled down, and I began to sort of remember who I was and the peace that I have in Jesus. And that I can't do all of this alone. I needed the help of my friends. I needed Jesus. I needed my church. I needed my doctors and my counselor. And I'm so much better now, and I'm so grateful. And this song is about all of that, but it's also about the fact that for those of us who follow Christ, whether it's in this life or the next, it's going to get better. It's not guaranteed that things are going to be easy or perfect here on earth, but someday when we see Jesus face to face, all sad things will come untrue and it will get better.
The maker of heaven and earth is making a way. Take a deep breath, he's not finished yet. Oh, this is not how it ends, this isn't forever. Hold on, it gets better.
And that was It Gets Better by Josh Wilson, and I'm so grateful that Josh has shared. Josh, if you'd be happy to pray for listeners right now, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. God, I lift up anyone who is listening to this right now, wherever they may be. God, as you know, this world can be difficult, and sometimes we lose hope. We thank you that when we lose our hope, or at least when we feel that way, that there is still hope. God, you offer the ultimate hope, even when our feelings don't match that. We know that feelings can be helpful, but they don't always tell the truth. And we're grateful that you are the truth, that you are good, that you know where we are in this moment. And Jesus, I thank you that you are holding this world together, even when it feels like it's falling apart. Jesus, I thank you that you've held me together through the ups and downs. And those who are listening, maybe if they're in a place where they're feeling anxious or depressed or alone or afraid or wondering if this life is worth living, God, please remind each of us that we're here for a reason, we're here on purpose, that you are in control and that you do not forget your children. I thank you for loving us. Thank you for the generous grace and mercy that you offer each one of us. God, I just pray for hope and faith and perseverance and resilience for each person who's hearing these words. And it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much, Josh. You know, there's a lot to your story. There really is. And I, as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, you know, I think that what you told me, you said you hid your drinking quite well. And I wonder whether or not within the church, there's going to be a lot of people who are struggling with both these issues that you've talked about, with their mental health, with panic attacks, with feeling depressed, and also self-medicating, drinking, whether it's just become a cultural thing or whether it's actually something that they feel they need it to just calm the situation. I guess one of the questions I've got is, at what point did you know for yourself that it was an issue? Because you said you drank and then you realized you were addicted.
Yeah.
Is it? I'm guessing it's one of those things that just grows a little bit at a time, probably. What's your experience? How would you test for people who are listening who are going, oh, that could be me?
Yeah.
How would you suggest they know?
That's a great question. And it is kind of one where if you find yourself asking, I'll just speak for myself. When I found myself asking, do I have a problem? The answer is usually yes. If you're asking that question, then it's at least a little bit of a problem, because you're starting to think, I'm probably drinking too much. And yes, it was a bit of a slippery slope for me. And I, like I said, for a good number of years, I would have a drink with friends at dinner. And then, you know, that would turn into two, because just the way alcohol works and our tolerance to it, you kind of need a little bit more to have that same sort of relaxed feeling. And after a while, I craved that relaxed feeling more so than the camaraderie of friends, or Just what happened sort of in the peripherals of drinking. I just thought about more so the drinking, and I was becoming addicted over time. And eventually I would kind of need it to turn my mind off to go to sleep. Otherwise I would lay in bed just thinking of everything I'm stressed about, everything I have to do. But it felt like if I could just have a drink or two, I wouldn't be thinking about that. What I didn't know, just on a practical and biological level, is that if you drink any amount before you go to bed, it actually inhibits good REM sleep more than any other substance. If you're trying to destroy good sleep, alcohol is the best way to do that. And I didn't know that. I thought it was helping me sleep. So, you know, I increased my usage over time, and then I was getting less and less sleep because the alcohol was inhibiting that. Eventually there were times where I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to drink anymore. And then by that night or by 2 or 3 days later, I was so anxious that I needed it to turn down that anxiety. And at that point, it's the alcohol withdrawal getting out of your system that's causing the anxiety, this rebound anxiety. So it's this vicious cycle. And I tried to quit on my own and I couldn't. And then I'd quit for a few days and then come back. And eventually I was like, I don't have the tools to be able to quit this on my own. And I had talked to God a lot about it. I'd prayed, God, please help me quit. And I knew this. I knew what God was telling me, but I was trying to like push his voice down. He was telling me, okay, I'm going to help you. You also need to tell a human. And, you know, the Bible says to confess to God and to somebody else. That's the somebody else was the hard part for me, because I knew, first of all, there was shame attached to it. I was ashamed that I was addicted to this substance and that I was using it. But also I knew if I had told somebody, there's some real accountability was going to come into play, because it was a secret. And as soon as I told somebody, it wasn't a secret anymore. But that's what I did. So I would just say, if you're dealing with an addiction to anything, be it a substance or a website or eating, you know, binge eating, or any of these things that we go to for comfort that feel good in the moment, but over time we think, man, this is not putting me on a good trajectory, I would just encourage you to tell God, which you might have already done, but also tell a trusted friend, someone you trust with the truth, and say, look, I need some help. I can't do this alone. None of us are meant to do this alone. And that's something I try to do way too often, is fix things on my own. So if it's your mental health, anxiety, depression, whatever it is you're dealing with, you don't have to do this alone. Jesus loves you, and you can tell him anything, of course, but find somebody else that you can tell. Gordon, I'm curious, do you have Celebrate Recovery in the UK?
So in the UK, we've got Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's numbers of other groups and organizations that provide a course that will enable you to work through things to get to a place of freedom. What's the one you mentioned? What's that called and what's that about?
There's a thing here in the States called Celebrate Recovery that started at Saddleback Church in California with Rick Warren. And it's kind of, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's more Christian, more faith-based. But I will say, yeah, there's all kinds of free groups that you can just go to and share with someone who understands what you're going through. I found that to be really helpful. Something else that's free, if you don't have access to something in person, is if you use the app or the website Reddit, search a group in Reddit called Stop Drinking. And it's about 250,000 people who are posting success stories or struggles, and people encouraging. That's been really helpful for me as well, the Stop Drinking subreddit. But yeah, I would just say, tell God, tell a trusted friend. And for me, for alcohol, I remember something I heard in an AA meeting. It was that I can have alcohol or I can have everything else. And I chose everything else. And it's been very, well, at first it was very, very hard, but it's been so worth it.
Okay. So hard, but there's hope. And actually, clearly, if you look at that equation, which one do you want, alcohol or all the other good stuff that's available? Alcohol, it isn't worth it, is it? It's not where you want to stay. So if anyone's listening to this and you're just going, I can't get out, I just think, just take heart in Josh's story that wherever you're up to, in whatever situation you're in, I'm particularly talking about alcohol right now, but it could be drugs or whatever, actually God does provide a way out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I've talked to lots of artists, and lots of them have struggled with alcohol or drugs in their past before they became Christians. But I think you're the first Christian who's come on, who is part of their Christian walk, has gone into this and had that struggle. And also, I'm pleased to say, come through it, which is come through and smiling. And clearly, you know, it's I guess it's an ongoing journey, and the devil will always come in to try and tempt you in different directions, all sorts of stuff. But you're walking victoriously. Did you say it's 7 years sober?
Yeah, this coming July will be 7 years.
Okay, so does there come a point where I don't? Is it a case that you it would no longer be a temptation to you?
I think everybody's story is different. I really do, because I think we're also different. Our minds, our bodies, our spirit. The first year for me was hard. It was very difficult. I was traveling with some other musicians, and on the tour bus there was alcohol. And so I had to come off stage every night and be in close proximity to booze. And I just remember getting in my bunk every night and crying, just because I had this physical withdrawal, and I was just praying, God, please give me the strength. And so for me, it was really hard. So I just want to encourage anybody, if you've quit or if you want to quit, if it's hard, that means you're probably doing something right, at least for a little while. But it does get so much easier. You won't. At first, I thought that first year, I thought, if this is the rest of my life, like, I don't know that I can handle this turmoil and just this temptation. But it got much better as time went on.
Okay, that is encouraging for sure. So when you first went, and you was it Becca you first told?
It wasn't Becca. I had been hiding my problem from her, and that's where most of my shame was. It was, of course, I was ashamed that I was, addicted to alcohol, but I was more ashamed that I was keeping a secret from my wife, from my best friend. I actually called my friend James, because I knew I needed to tell Becca, but I wasn't ready. I called James and I said, James, I am drinking too much. I have a problem. I need help. I need to tell Becca, and I'm telling you so that you can keep me accountable, because I've got to tell her. And then I called my counselor, and I actually went to a few sessions of therapy with an addiction therapist. And then finally, after a couple of weeks, I actually wrote out what I wanted to say, because I was so nervous. And I read it in front of her, and she was just so kind and gracious, and thanked me and embraced me and said, you know, I'm with you. And she came with me the next morning to my addiction therapist and met him, and we started that journey together.
Man, I really like your wife. She sounds great. So, well,
I'm telling you, she is my role model. I want to be like her when I grow up.
Wow. Okay. So we've talked a lot about some of the dark times, but I can ask about your record label, actually, just very quickly. When you were in that struggle with alcohol, and you came out and did you tell your label what was going on? Did they have to find out?
No, I didn't say anything. I was actually, when I finally got help, I was out. I was independent at the time. I had spent 10 years with Capitol with Sparrow Records. We parted ways mutually and friendly. And I had just been offered another record deal from another record company, Black River. And this is about the time I was getting help. And actually, you know, the verse that says it's God's kindness that leads to repentance. Well, I thought I was done with music. And when I got offered this other record deal, it's about the time I wrote my song Dream Small. And I knew it was a special song and it meant a lot to me. And I had a chance to put it out through this record label. That's another piece of me sort of coming clean, was basically saying, God's given me another chance in music. And it was just his kindness. It was just like so much kindness in the midst of my struggle that's another reason I decided to reach out for help. Well, so then I quit drinking. I got help. I was very private with all of it. It just wasn't something I wanted to be public about with anyone except my closest friends. So I didn't, I didn't speak publicly about it. It was just last year or about a year and a half ago that I finally, it was like, I hid my addiction and then I hid my sobriety, because with that, you have to say I had an addiction. And I've heard it said that you should speak from your scars and not your open wounds. because you don't want to bleed all over everybody. So that's part of why I waited. I wanted to make sure I could stay sober and also just have some time under my belt to start talking about these things. That's a good question. It was God's kindness that led to repentance. And now I can speak from those scars, but also still be honest and vulnerable about my struggles. And just say that Jesus is the one that's holding me together these days.
Well, I've got to say, it's got to be something that makes a huge difference when you're out on the road with people hearing your stories. Can you share some examples of people you've met where they've talked to you about the impact your music and testimony has had?
Yes. Well, and I'll say this too. Feel free to reach out to me on my Instagram, whether it's a comment or a direct message, because I've had most of my interactions with people who are struggling are on social media. But I've had some people at shows come up and say, thank you for sharing. I'm 2 weeks sober. Or I'm a month sober. I'm 5 years sober. And so you kind of have that solidarity with people who know what it's like. And for folks where I've had a longer time sober than them, it's great to be able to pour into them and encourage. I've met a couple people who've messaged me, folks that I know, but I didn't know they had a problem. They hit it like me. And I've met them for coffee or a meal and just sort of shared my story and shared some of the tools that have helped me. It just helps people to know they're not alone. And especially when I talk about anxiety and depression, again, as a Christian who struggles with these things, I think sometimes we think, I'm a Christian. I can't have depression. I can't have anxiety or panic attacks. And that's just not true. That's why we need Jesus. We need Jesus in those moments. And again, some people may be healed from those miraculously and immediately and permanently. And then others of us, it's a daily thing to get up and say, God, I give you this day. I surrender. I give you my heart. You're the one holding me together. I can't do this without you. So I've had a lot of people sort of respond about those things as well, both online and after shows.
So I'm gonna guess actually that it's gonna be one of those things where after the show there might be people going, oh, I really would like to say something. Well, you mentioned your social medias. How do people find your social medias?
Yeah, so I think I'm most active on Instagram, but I'm also active on Facebook. You can find the links to all those at my website, which is joshwilsonmusic.com.
joshwilsonmusic.com.
Yeah, that's the hub. I would tell you all the different handles, but they're all different, so it's confusing. Yeah, Josh Wilson, don't forget the music.com. joshwilsonmusic.com.
.com, easy, okay. So which record label are you on at the moment?
I am independent at the moment. I have some distribution through a label called Rethink. And so it's a bit of a more of a mutual partnership rather than a true record label. So I'm getting to try some things I've wanted to try for years, but I haven't been able to because I've been a part of more of a traditional record label. So one of the things I'm trying this year is I'm releasing 24 songs in 2024. So that's new. That's a faster pace than I've ever been able to release. I've always written tons of songs, but you just can't release them that fast when you sort of have to go through the traditional label method. So, I'm independent and I'm trying out kinds of new stuff. And this will be with the time with my last record label, I was only able to release 9 songs in 5 years. And now I'm going to release 24 songs in 1 year.
Wow. That's a huge difference.
Yeah. That's one reason I'm smiling. And that's another reason I felt depressed in those days is I was writing all these songs that couldn't come out, and I have nothing bad to say about the folks there. It's just the way the system is set up, that I think this is where I'm supposed to be now.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to guess it means all the responsibility is on your shoulder, but you're looking fairly confident in that. So
yeah,
24 tracks in a year. Next year, are we going to do 25? Is this going to be like a...
I've thought about it. I don't know. I'll have to take that year as it comes.
That makes sense. Have you written all of them? Are they all nearly finished and ready to go?
Of the 24, there are 3 that haven't been written or that are partially written. Everything else has been written. They've not all been recorded. So that's what I'm spending a lot of my time on, is getting them recorded. So I feel confident that they'll all get out there. There's 11 songs on my next album, and that comes out in either May or June. And then I'll be releasing a single every month, and then I'll be doing a Christmas EP. So I've got the plan, and I've got to finish writing, but it's all in the works.
It's all in the works, which sounds, it sounds like a lot of work, but it sounds like a lot of fun. And great that you were able to actually just release the stuff you've got rather than have to hold on to it. So that's awesome. Now, the next track we've got to play from you, I think is a worldwide exclusive at this point, Jesus and Therapy, it's called. Tell us about the track and also tell us all about the project and the bigger picture of it all.
Sure. Okay, the project is called Mental Help, H-E-L-P, and it's just a collection of songs that talks about my journey with anxiety, depression, and addiction and recovery, and sort of runs the gamut on all of those subjects. I'm very proud of this music. It's the most personal and vulnerable music I've ever released. And so, yeah, It Gets Better was the first single. And then Jesus and Therapy is the second single. And you're right. You guys are hearing it a month before it comes out. It is, it is my story of how I couldn't do any of this without help. And of course, without Jesus and without just the wise counsel that I've got from multiple people. I had my addiction therapist. I had my mental health sort of coach, and then my pastor and my friends. And to me, it's been both. And tell God, the bridge of the song just says, tell God, tell somebody else, tell God and somebody else. And that's that trusted friend who I needed to call and say, I can't do this alone. And it's really fun because I wrote this song with another artist who I'm a big fan of. Her name is JJ Heller, and she sings on it. So you'll hear her voice on the track. And when it comes out, it's actually going to be, the artist will say, Josh Wilson featuring JJ Heller. And I wrote that song with her and her husband, Dave. She's dealt with anxiety too, and she speaks openly about that. And so I knew I wanted to write that song with her since she understands how that feels. And the second verse, it says, maybe it's bravery to feel the anxiety and let myself finally speak what's inside of me. And that's been true for me. I think it takes courage to admit when we need help. And that's what the song is all about. It was originally called I Need Help. That's what the chorus says. But I decided to name it what the first verse says, which is Jesus and Therapy.
I'm so grateful that you've been with us today on the Arts Interview. And I'm so grateful for this track. When I listened to it, I just went, you know, we play a lot of tracks that are full of a lot of truth. And, you know, they're great tracks and they say all sorts of stuff about God. But I also thought this might be one of the most honest tracks that I've ever had the joy of playing.
Tell God and somebody else. 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 Tell God and somebody else.
That was Jesus and Therapy by the wonderful Josh Wilson. I'm so grateful for that guy's heart, for his story, his honesty, and the things that he shared. And I just want to say, if you've been listening to this program and you've gone, you know, this is something that actually is impacting me, whether it's depression, anxiety, struggles with your mental health, or if it's addiction to some substance, just what wise words he gave there about telling God and somebody. I really want to encourage you, reach out to somebody, get some help. Don't stay where you are. God has a plan. There is hope for the future, and his heart is for you. So I hope that you found Josh's story encouraging in that. And we look forward to playing loads more of his music, of course, here on this station. And I also want to say there's loads of other artists with great stories, great music that you can enjoy on the Arts Interview. Just go and search up on your favorite podcast platform, I'm your host, Gordon T, and I look forward to being with you on the next episode. God bless you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Artist Interview, a Hope FM podcast. Find us at hopefm.com/theartistinterview.